This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. After a year of calling sweatpants, soft pants, and jeans hard pants, it's clear that living through a pandemic has changed our relationship with our clothes. But what we wear has always said a lot about who we are, and that hasn't changed.
I'm 67 years old, and I have a kilt in my closet, and I look for every opportunity to wear it.
A piece of clothing that means a lot to me is just a wool button-up shirt that's shrunk over the years because it's wool, but it belonged to my great-grandfather, and he brought it with him from Czechoslovakia when he emigrated to the U.S.
It's a baseball hat that has a big floral design on it, and it has butting holes and a couple rips and is covered in a nice patina of chalk dust and paint drips. And I've been using this as my busking hat, meaning that when I go and create chalk art on the sidewalks all over the world, this is the hat I always put out to collect tips and money.
One of my favorite articles of clothing is a shirt that my mother gave me that she wore when she was in her early 20s. So that shirt's about 35 years old, and I still get compliments on it every time I wear it.
Those are some of the many messages you left in our inbox. Artist Emily Spivak has been exploring the link between clothing and identity for over a decade. Her archival project, Worn Stories, was recently adapted as a Netflix miniseries, and she joins us now from Brooklyn to talk about it. Emily, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take us back to 2007 when you first started collecting stories about people's clothes. Was there a particular piece of clothing that got the project started?
Sure. So back in 2007, I was on eBay. I love eBay. And I was into vintage high heels at the time. So I was digging around on eBay for vintage high heels, and I came upon this Playboy Bunny costume that was complete with like the puffball tails and the bunny ears and the stockings. And what came with it was the ID card of the woman who had owned the Playboy Bunny costume. And it was just this black and white photo. She was in her street clothes, just kind of like a driver's license photo. And there was something at that moment that clicked for me, like, who is this woman? What's the story behind her? What did she do? You know, what was she doing the day the photo was taken? What did she do when she was a Playboy Bunny? And I kind of wanted to know more. And so that started me down a rabbit hole of digging through eBay, looking to see if I could find stories. And if I would dig deep enough, I could find stories of people who were selling, talked about what they did while they were wearing the thing that they were selling, why they were getting rid of it. And I started collecting those stories in a project that I called Sentimental Value. And I did that for about 7 years, where I was create this archive of all these stories I found from eBay. I started bidding on the garments and showing them in gallery settings, the garments along with the stories. And then I looked in my own closet and I realized that, you know, I also had this, I would look in my closet and see this archive of experiences and memories and, you know, something that was my grandmother, something that had been passed down to me. Mm-hmm. So I started writing my own stories connected to a piece of clothing based on, you know, kind of having seen all these stories on eBay that I had been collecting, quickly realizing that I was far more interested in other people's stories than my own. So I started asking many other people for their stories, and that's where the project really began, when I started interviewing other people about their stories.
Well, why clothes specifically? When I think about, you know, the different parts of our identity, you know, you can talk about food or where someone has lived. What is it about clothing specifically?
Sure. Well, we all walk through the world wearing clothing or, you know, maybe deciding to not wear clothing,
right.
But that's a deliberate decision. But the experiences that we have, you know, the only thing that separates us from the experiences that we're having in the world are the things that we're wearing. And our clothes absorb those experiences. I mean, as your callers mentioned, you know, things get like kind of ripped up and torn, or they collect dust. They gather the scent of things. And also for me, clothing is incredibly democratic. You know, I'm not talking about fashion with a capital F. I'm talking about just the things that we put on every day. And so we all have those experiences because we're all putting on clothes every day.
Well, the Netflix miniseries captures a wide variety of stories about our relationship to what we wear. But the very first episode features nudists talking about why they choose not to wear clothes. And here's a clip of Diane and Paul, who live in a nudist community in Kissimmee, Florida.
I hate clothes. They're terrible. It's so much better being totally naked. I can't imagine having to get up and put on a bra.
I just enjoy coming here and taking the garbage out naked and walking up and down the streets.
I like just being able to wake up and you're already ready to start your day.
How did meeting a community of nudists make you think differently about the link between clothing and identity?
I think it made me think about how much what we put on is a real decision, and that it is something that we're very deliberate in thinking about. And that, you know, as much as clothing can be a mode of creative expression, so too can the decision to not wear clothing. So I had a vision that I really wanted to start the show at a nudist colony or thinking about that deliberate decision to not wear clothing.
Emily, what's your worn story?
Well, I have two different stories that are in the book, in Worn Stories and in Worn in New York. But I do have a little bit more of a pandemic story that I feel like I have this gray sweatshirt, and I've had it since I was like 12 years old. And I used to wear it with gray sweatpants and wear it when I was going ice skating, ice skating lessons. And then I kind of rediscovered it at a certain point and started wearing it again and realized that I just love the way that it fit. And before the pandemic, I was dressing it up with leather pants and high heels. But then it found another life during the pandemic. And it's this just completely nondescript gray sweatshirt. And it just became my comfort sweatshirt. And I just like would put it on every day. But I could also kind of like, you know, if I had to get on a Zoom meeting, I could put on a collared shirt underneath it. And it could, it was like a little inside joke that I had with myself where I knew that this sweatshirt was just kind of this old, nothing, nondescript sweatshirt, but that it had seen, you know, ice skating rinks and it had seen gallery openings, but that it now, you know, it was, you know, part of these Zoom meetings and just had kind of gotten me through this time. But it was like a little inside joke with myself.
Well, we mentioned at the top that for many of us, this last year has called for a much more casual wardrobe. Has this made you think any differently about the relationship between our clothes and who we are?
Well, my hope is that when we emerge from this, we will think differently about the clothes that we wear and that we will be drawn to things in our closet that have a provenance, that have a story, that were passed down to us by someone who, you know, is a significant person in our life. You know, as opposed to the thing that was like this specific season or this specific moment, I hope that we'll be drawn to those kinds of clothes. And then also I think we're going to just see an outpouring of color and vibrancy and fabrics. But I do hope that people will think a little bit differently and put things on that have a story connected to them.
Coming up, we'll meet two people featured in the show and hear about their relationship to what they wear.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Amazon Prime Video with The Underground Railroad. From Academy Award winner Barry Jenkins and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Colson Whitehead, the new Amazon original The Underground Railroad chronicles Cora Randall, played by newcomer Tuso Mbedu. When she discovers an actual network of trains and tunnels beneath the southern soil, Cora must evade a violent bounty hunter before she can find freedom. The Underground Railroad premieres May 14th on Amazon Prime Video.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
We're talking about the stories our clothes tell about who we are. And we asked you to share with us a story about a special item in your closet. Here's Stephen in Ohio.
My favorite piece of clothing when I figure skate is a velvet blue print skate dress that looks like shimmering water. It's a classic design with a drop waist and a four-circle skirt. Even though the skating community constrains my participation, I don't let it constrain my choice of attire. I had it custom made from a shop in New York. Even though it's outdated, I still love to skate in at rinks that don't discriminate against me and my choice of attire.
Stephen, thanks for that message. We also heard from Lisa, who tweets, in 2017, I ran for public office for the first time and was the first Latina to ever run and win a seat on the Boise City Council. I am a renter and come from a low-income background. This campaign shirt reminds me to keep it pushing. Si se puede. Lisa, thanks for sharing that. And I want to add another voice to the conversation. Joining us from New York is Ernie Glam. He's a journalist, designer, and New York City nightclub personality. He's featured in an episode of Worn Stories called Beginnings. Ernie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you're credited with helping create the club kid scene in the late 80s. For people who aren't familiar, what is the club kid aesthetic all about?
Well, the club kids were a group of rambunctious and loud and flamboyant young people from the late 80s and early 90s who ended up becoming very popular and having parties and nightclubs in New York City. And eventually, large crowds of people came to the parties that we hosted. So basically, we were college age kids or a little older, and we were loud and flashy.
Now, give us some examples of things you wore when you went out.
Well, I was very flashy. So in the Worn Stories episode, I talk about this jumpsuit made of broadcloth in this loud purple and pink pattern with a cage that came out of the neck and attached to my head. So that would be something. At the Limelight nightclub, I actually wore a chicken suit every Wednesday and I would dance on the stage for hours. That was my job, basically. And then when I wasn't wearing the chicken suit, I would be running around in hot go-go shorts, usually made of lamé or some kind of flashy material with polka dots or spangles glued on my face.
Now, in your episode of Worn Stories, you talk about how being a club kid wasn't just about, you know, being flashy and just wearing whatever you wanted. What else was it about for you?
Well, for me, being a club kid was a way of internalizing the otherness that people assigned to me when I was younger, because when I grew up in California, I grew up in Sacramento, California, and I really did not feel like I fit in there, and I was made to not feel like I didn't fit in by other kids because they were bullies and people would just point out my otherness. So when I got older, I guess it was a coping mechanism for me of dealing with being other. So when I got older, I began dressing really eccentrically and really in really flashy ways. And I think it was my way of setting myself apart because I had already been set apart by people. So I kind of created a reason for being apart. And then later on, I just started loving it and wanted to keep doing it.
Describe how it felt when you put on one of these really iconic outfits you wore.
Well, it feels absolutely wonderful because when you are dressed in some really flashy or flamboyant outfit and you get out of a taxi in New York and you walk up to the ropes, and of course the people at the ropes will let you in because you're dressed fabulously. So you get to walk in and they, you know, give you a ticket and you get in for free to the club, and everybody's looking at you once you walk in and you make your great entrance. It's really a rush. I mean, I can't really describe it in any other way but this fabulous rush that you get of everybody paying attention to you and running up to you and telling you that you look great.
Now, Ernie, the item of clothing you talk about in Worn Stories is this purple jumpsuit and headpiece. It's like a cage around your head. And you wore it on the Joan Rivers show back in 1992. She was doing a segment about the club kid scene in New York City. Let's take a listen.
Today, right here on the Joan Rivers Show, you are going to meet people who go out of their way to dress to get attention. People whose very existence says, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Ernie, what was that moment like for you?
Well, we were kind of scared at first because Joan Rivers, although we loved her, she did have a reputation for being really mean. And we weren't sure whether she was going to be sweet to us or nasty. So we were all a little nervous. But, you know, when we came on, she absolutely loved us. And she didn't really say any mean things to us. And we had a great time on the show. We realized that she was a kindred spirit. And that if she could have been one of those outfits, she might have put one on.
So when you get dressed today, whether it's to, you know, just go out and have brunch with friends or to go out for a night on the town, how do you think that experience in the Club Kids scene informed, you know, what you wear right now?
Well, I'm still a flashy person. I mean, I'm at my day job now, so I'm wearing a shirt and tie. And I think that it's flashy for a work environment. But when I go out, I still wear really flashy clothes and makeup and all that. And it definitely informs what I do. It informs everything I do because my whole consciousness is about flash and style and sending messages through fashion to people.
We're talking to Ernie Glam, a designer and New York City nightclub personality. Also with us, Emily Spivak, the creator of the clothing archive project Worn Stories. It was recently adapted as a Netflix miniseries. You know, Emily, as I was watching the series, certain themes emerged. And one of the themes was about how clothes connect us to people we love. How prevalent is that in your archive?
Oh, it's a theme that it comes through constantly. I think that that's one of the main themes is the connection that we have to someone who, a loved one or, a significant other through the clothing. And that you know, sometimes, you know, someone just can't figure out why they can't get rid of that thing. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'll ask, and they're like, you know what, it's because it was my grandmother's, because it was my mother's. It just has that connection. And what I love about, you know, these stories that we keep hearing from the callers is that, you know, nothing is like this in pristine condition. They're faded, they're beat up, but they're so well loved.
Ernie, how has your relationship to dressing up changed over the last year, given that, you know, nightclubs have been closed and a lot of the things that we would dress up for just haven't been accessible?
It was very depressing for me to not be able to go out and dress up, whether that was for work or for nightclubs. One of the only ways that I kept myself hopeful was by making clothes. And so during the pandemic, I made many outfits because it was the hope that I would go back to nightclubs and that they would reopen and that life would go back to normal. So that was my way of staying sane during the pandemic.
Yeah. Ernie, anything you're particularly looking forward to wearing on the other side of all of this?
I bought this great dress at a thrift store in Sacramento right before the pandemic started. And it had a black print with white slashes on it. And I was going to paint my whole face with the same print. And I'm looking forward to wearing that out in clubs.
That's Ernie Glam. He's a journalist, designer, and New York City nightclub personality. Ernie, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Coming up, we'll meet one more person with a story to tell about the impact of what we wear on our lives. More from our guests and from you in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now let's get back to the conversation about our relationship with our clothes. We also got this email from Trevor who says, my wife is a professional cosplayer and seamstress. Cosplay allows her to take fantasy and apply it to real life. Her wedding dress and many of her clients' requests and commissions involve adding aspects from clothing and video games, movies, and graphic novels to the attire that people wear every day. She has to make them comfortable and functional. And Leandria tweeted us a photo of her item and wrote, I wore this dress when I was crowned Miss Juneteenth Kansas City, hoping my daughter may wear it somewhere special one day. Emily, you know, when you started doing this project and you think about where you are with it now, how have you begun to think differently about clothing, what you actually wear yourself?
Well, I certainly put on clothes every day. And when I put them on, I think about the story that's connected to them far more, I think, than necessarily like what the actual piece of clothing is. I also think that a lot of these clothes, they don't necessarily have a story attached to them immediately. So, you know, you walk through the world and things happen to you as you're wearing the clothing. Unexpected things happen. So I also kind of, in a way, each time I put, say, you know, the jumpsuit that I'm wearing right now, each time I put it on, I remember sort of the collection of things that happened to me while I was wearing it. And that archive of experiences grows each time. So it's, you know, they're these markers for me.
Let's bring one more voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Vallejo, California, is Antoine Williams. He's also featured in Worn Stories, and Antoine is the co-founder of the award-winning podcast Ear Hustle. He's currently the podcast's sound designer and sound engineer. Antoine, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So when you were 18, you were sentenced to 15 years in prison. And in your episode of Worn Stories, you talk about the emotional toll of wearing a prison uniform. How did wearing that uniform make you feel?
In my earlier years, it wasn't something that I noticed. But as I started to get closer to my release date, I could feel the differences between the looks and the energy that I would get from people, right? Like when I would meet people and I would start to have conversations and, you know, try to build or establish some kind of either connection or network. You know, things would change. They would be like, oh, I never knew you were so articulate, or I wasn't expecting this. And it kind of was jarring. It was shocking. Like, what did you expect? Right. And then I had to realize that people's initial introduction to me was this outfit, right? Like, they see me from a distance. They see a shirt and a jacket and pants that say prisoner. And it's like, that isn't all that I am. And it started to weigh heavy on me.
You also talk about how the fit of these uniforms, how it changed your body language, because they were so baggy, they made you move in certain ways. Can you explain that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of the clothes are almost like one size fits all, right? Like, they have small, medium, large, extra large, but there's really no difference in those sizes. Maybe, like, you know, to some varying degrees. But so much of the clothing there are, it's like thick jeans or thick denim, you know, heavy T-shirts, heavy pants. And what it would do is, because they don't fit, you constantly have to, like, use your arms and your legs to, like, kick your pants legs up, something. And you have to do something to keep your clothes literally from falling off of you. And what that does is, it not only does it get frustrating over time, but it just becomes like a part of your demeanor. Mm-hmm. And now you can't help but to walk with your hands in your pants, or you can't help but to walk kind of grabbing near your crotch area to hold your pants legs up. And just even from a distance, that looks, that says something, right? Like, that tells you a story about a person, whether or not you know who they are or where they are in their life. And it became such of a hassle that I felt the energy of me, like, stepping into this mode of, like, this is what a prisoner is supposed to look and feel like. And it wasn't something that I could continue with.
So you decided to start altering your clothes. You got a sewing kit. Mm-hmm. Explain first how you figured out how to alter them, because it took some doing.
Yeah. It was almost like an epiphany moment, kind of just looking at the fact that, like, you know, there's like one pant leg is completely bare, right? And I remember kind of having a conversation with a buddy of mine, and before maybe 2005 or something, all of the pants didn't have CDC or prisoner on it, right? Like, they were just blank blue pants. And I'm like, man, they need to bring them back. I'm like, so I start cutting and sewing mine together. in a joking manner, right? Mm-hmm. But he was like, hey, that might work. And I'm like, you know what? Like, hey, ain't in, you know, I ain't got nothing but time. That's another saying in there. Like, man, I ain't got nothing but time. And it came out of a joking, like banter between me and a friend of mine. But it was something like, man, you know what? Let's try it. Let's see what it looks like. Let's see how it works. And it just so happened to come together.
So you would cut the leg off of one pair of pants and sew it on to the other pair of pants so that label prisoner wasn't on the pants, but you also slimmed them down so that they fit you better. How did you mm-hmm. feel the first time you put on those altered clothes?
So when I first put my altered clothes on, it was in 2015, and I distinctly remember this GQ issue that had Idris Elba on it, right?
Uh-huh.
And I remember, I just remember thinking in my head, like, this dude is sharp, right? Like, let me get my like this, and I'm good to go. I'm set. And when I hemmed everything and I had my pants on, and it's like I felt that, right? Like, I kind of felt, not necessarily like I was Idris Elba, but I felt more like I was in a professional setting. Right? Like, I didn't feel like I was attached to such oppression like that a prison gives you, right? Like, I didn't fit that anymore. Like, that was no longer a part of my narrative. And in the responses that I got from, you know, the guys in there, like, at first it was like, you know, a lot of like friendly jokes, but at the tail end of the jokes, it was like, you know, young brother, you look good. And then it went from people acknowledging and starting to like see me in a different light to me starting to understand and receive myself differently and to show up in the spaces differently. And it changed everything for me.
Emily, what struck you about Antoine's story?
That kind of transformation. I mean, first of all, the desire and the creativity to alter your prison uniform that you could see, you know, that the, oh, if I take these pants apart and sew them together in this way, and, you know, that I could actually do something that I, you know, I feel good about. And then also just how it made him feel, how it changed his perception of who he was, and, you know, using the limitations that he had in prison. And I think that was just incredibly powerful to me.
Now, Antoine, we learn in your story that you were eventually put in administrative segregation for altering your clothes. How did that experience shape the way you think of mass incarceration and the way our country runs correctional facilities?
I think in that moment, it kind of solidified the fact that, you know, prisons are not to reform, right? Like, they are to kind of keep people in the space that they are, because in this scenario, you have a person who is making changes to better themselves, but the administration sees that change as something that is a direct violation of what they stand for. And I think if most prisons look at how the incarcerated people, how they feel about themselves, it automatically changes how they would perceive them. Because again, for one, when you are labeled as a prisoner, as a convict, as a felon, you know, for so long, you take on those attributes. And when I was in administrative segregation, it's like, I'm not here for drugs. I'm not here for violence. You know, I'm not here for trying to escape. I'm not here for trying to do harm. I'm here because I want to change the way I look. So when I do the work that ultimately became like an award-winning podcast, that I am seen as something positive and progressive. Like, that was a direct threat to their ideology. And it's just proof that, again, you know, we can attach rehabilitation to it. We can say that, you know, like, you know, these prisons are to like keep community safe. But when the change is happening from inside, that the prisons don't necessarily support that. And that's something that should really be taken into consideration when we think about how is it that we show up in the lives of others that ultimately changes the dynamics of the communities that we live in.
Emily, What's next for this project? Because as we've been hearing, there's so many stories behind what we wear.
I mean, keep collecting these stories. That's what I want to do. I mean, it doesn't get old. And I feel like I keep learning from the people like Antoine, like Ernie, like all of the people who I got to speak with for Worn Stories, for the show, for the books. These stories just continue. And so I'm hoping that I can continue to collect them and share them with people before the garments are gone and the stories are forgotten.
That's Emily Spivak. She's the creator of the project Worn Stories, which was recently adapted as a very delightful Netflix miniseries. Also with us, Antoine Williams. He's the co-founder of the award-winning podcast Ear Hustle. He's currently their sound designer and sound engineer. Emily, Antoine, thanks for your time. Today's producer was Catherine Fink. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.